The sixth Sunday in ordinary time, a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5, verses 17 to 37. Jesus said to his disciples, "Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to complete them. I tell you solemnly, till heaven and earth disappear, not one dot, not one little stroke shall disappear from the law until its purpose is achieved. Therefore, the man who infringes even one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be considered the least in the kingdom of heaven. But the man who keeps them and teaches them will be considered great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, if your virtue goes no deeper than that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven. You have learned how it was said to our ancestors, 'You must not kill,' and if anyone does kill, he must answer for it before the court. But I say this to you, anyone who is angry with his brother will answer for it before the court. If a man calls his brother fool, he will answer for it before the Sanhedrin. And if a man calls him renegade, he will answer for it in hellfire. So then, if you are bringing your offering to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar. Go and be reconciled with your brother first, and then come back and present your offering. Come to terms with your opponent in good time while you are still on the way to the court with him, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. I tell you solemnly, you will not get out till you have paid the last penny. You have learnt how it was said, 'You must not commit adultery.' But I say this to you, if a man looks at a woman lustfully, he has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye should cause you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it will do you less harm to lose one part of you than to have your whole body thrown into hell. And if your right hand should cause you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it will do you less harm to lose one part of you than to have your whole body go to hell. It has also been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a writ of dismissal. But I say this to you, everyone who divorces his wife, except for the case of fornication, makes her an adulteress, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have learned how it was said to our ancestors, 'You must not break your oath, but must fulfill your oaths to the Lord.' But I say this to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, since that is God's throne, or by the earth, since that is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, since that is the city of the great King. Do not swear by your own head either, since you cannot turn a single hair white or black. All you need say is yes, if you mean yes, no, if you mean no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one."
Continuing his talk on the Beatitudes, Jesus is addressing a large crowd, and he says, "What I told you yesterday must not cause you to think that I have come to abolish the law. No. But since I am the man, and I understand the weakness of man, I wanted to encourage you to comply with it, turning your spiritual eyes not to the dark abyss, but to the bright sublimity. Because if the fear of punishment can hold you back 3 times out of 10, the certainty of a reward will urge you 7 times out of 10. Trust is therefore more productive than fear. And I want you to be fully and firmly confident so that you accomplish not 7 parts of good out of 10, but 10 out of 10, and thus gain the most holy prize of heaven. I will not change 1 iota of the law. And who gave it amongst the peals of thunder on Sinai? The Most High. Who is the Most High? God, 1 and 3. Where did he take it from? From his thought. How did he give it? By his word. Why did he give it? Out of his love. You can thus see that the Trinity was present, and the Word, obedient as ever to the thought and the love, spoke on behalf of the thought and the love. Could I give myself the lie? No, I could not. I know that what I am about to say will taste bitter to many tongues, but I cannot tell lies, even if the truth I am about to speak will make many enemies for me. I solemnly tell you that unless you create a new justice, detaching it completely from the poor and unfairly defined justice which the Pharisees and scribes have taught you, and unless you are really more than just the Pharisees and scribes who think they are just because they increase the number of formulae without any substantial change of their spirits, unless you do these things, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. So great is the precept of love for your neighbour, the perfecting of the precept of love for your neighbour, that I no longer say, as it was said, do not kill, because he who kills will be condemned by men. But I say to you, do not get angry, because a higher judgment is above you and takes into account immaterial actions. Whoever insults his brother will be condemned by the Sanhedrin. But whoever treats him as a madman and consequently has harmed him will be condemned by God. It is useless to make offers at the altar unless you, for the sake of God, first sacrifice the ill feelings in your hearts and fulfill the most holy rite of forgiveness. Therefore, when you are about to make an offering to God, and you remember that you have wronged your brother and you bear him a grudge because of a fault of his, leave your offering before the altar and make first the sacrifice of your self-esteem by becoming reconciled to your brother. Then come to the altar, and only then your sacrifice will be holy. Full agreement is always the best business. The judgment of man is precarious, and whoever stubbornly challenges it may lose the cause and have to pay the opponent down to the last coin or languish in jail. You heard that in the old days it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." Those who among you have heard me in other places know that I have spoken about that sin several times. Because look, as far as I am concerned, it is a sin not for one person only, but for 2 or for 3. I will make myself clear. An adulterer sins with regard to himself. He sins with regard to his accomplice, and sins causing the betrayed wife or husband to sin. They may in fact be led to despair or to commit a crime, that is, with regard to the accomplished sin. But I will say more. I say, not only the accomplished sin, but the desire to accomplish it is already a sin. What is adultery? It is to crave for him who is not ours, or for her who is not ours. One begins to sin by wishing, continues by seduction, completes it by persuasion, and crowns it by the deed. I therefore say to you, if a man looks at a woman lustfully, he has already committed adultery with her, because his thought has accomplished the deed of his desire. If your right eye should cause you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to be without one eye than to be thrown into the infernal darkness forever. And if your right hand should cause you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it will do you less harm to lose one part of you than to have your whole body go to hell. It is true that it is written that deformed people cannot serve God in the temple. But after this life, the deformed by birth who are holy, and those who are deformed out of virtue, will become more beautiful than angels and will serve God, loving him in the happiness of heaven. It has also been said to you, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a writ of dismissal. But that is to be condemned, for it does not come from God. I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for the case of fornication, exposes her to adultery. Because what will the divorced woman do in 90% of the cases? She will get married again. With what consequences? Oh, how much there is to be said about that. Do you not know that you can cause involuntary incests by such a system? How many tears are shed because of lust? Yes, lust. There is no other name for it. Be frank. Everything can be overcome when the spirit is righteous. But everything is an excuse to satisfy sensuality when the spirit is lustful. Woman's frigidity, dullness, ineptitude for housework, shrewish tongue, love for luxury, everything can be overcome, also diseases and irritability, if one loves with holiness. But as after some time one does not love as on the first day, what is more than possible is considered impossible, and a poor woman is thrown onto the road or to perdition. He who rejects her commits adultery. He who marries her after the divorce commits adultery. Only death dissolves a marriage. Remember that. And if your choice is an unhappy one, bear the consequences as a cross, both of you being unhappy but holy, without also making the children unhappy, as they are innocent and suffer more because of such unfortunate situations. The love for your children should cause you to ponder 100 times. God cannot be deceived by means of false words, and he judges you not according to what you swear, but what you do. I say to you, never swear, neither by heaven, which is the throne of God, nor by the earth, which is the stool of his feet, nor for Jerusalem and her temple, which are the city of the great King and the house of the Lord our God. Do not swear either by the graves of the deceased or by their souls. Graves are full of the dross of the inferior part of man, which is common also to animals. And with regard to their souls, leave them in their dwellings. Leave the holy deceased in their peace, and the unholy ones in their pains. Why appeal to the dead? They cannot speak. Do not swear by the head of your father or of your mother, or by the head of your wife or of your innocent children. You have no right to do so. You are a man gifted with reason and consequently responsible for your actions. And you must act by yourself. And you must employ, as a guarantee for your own deeds and words, your own honesty, your own frankness, and the reputation that you enjoy with your neighbour, not the honesty and frankness of your relatives and the reputation they enjoy. Do not swear by your own head, your eyes, your tongue, your hands. You have no right to do so. Everything you have belongs to God. You are only the temporary guardians, the bankers of the moral and material treasures which God granted you. Why then make use of what does not belong to you? Let your speech be simply, yes it is, no it is not, nothing else. Any addition is suggested by the evil one, who later will laugh at you because you cannot remember everything and you will contradict yourself. And you will be jeered at and recognized as a liar. Be sincere, my children, both in your words and in your prayers. Jesus demonstrates two instances of the importance of saying just yes or no. The first is shortly before his passion and death, when a group of influential Israelites invite him to a meeting where they propose that he become their king. He listens for some time without responding. Finally, he is told, "We're trodden down in the world because although we are great in number and wealth, we are like sheep without a shepherd. Rally your people with the old cry, 'Return to your tents, Israel.' And from every spot of the diaspora, your subjects will spring up like a lever, overthrowing the tottering thrones of the mighty ones who are not loved by God." Jesus is silent. He is the only one to be sitting calmly, as if the matter did not concern him, in the middle of about 40 hot-headed men, of whose arguments I can grasp only a tiny part, as if they are all speaking at the same time, making a terrible din. He maintains his attitude and remains silent. They all shout, "Say a word, answer!" Jesus stands up slowly, pushing his hands on the edge of the table. There is dead silence. While 80 eyes aflame with curiosity stare at him, he opens his lips and the others do likewise, as if they wanted to inhale his reply. And the reply is short but resolute. No. Jesus comments to Maria Valtorta on Pontius Pilate's dilemma and uncertainty when pressed by many of these same people to have Jesus killed. Like all weak people, he puts off for a little while the decision that he does not feel like taking, hoping that the rising clamour will abate. I said, "When you speak, say yes, if you mean yes, no, if you mean no." But he did not hear that. And if somebody repeated it to him, he shrugged his shoulders as usual. In order to succeed in the world, to have honours and profits, it is necessary to be able to make a no of a yes and a yes of a no, according to what common sense, read human sense, advises. How many Pilates there are in the 20th century? Where are the Christian heroes who said yes, constantly yes, to the truth for the sake of the truth, and no, constantly no, to falsehood? Where are the heroes who are able to face danger and events with brave strength and tranquil quickness and do not postpone, because good is to be accomplished at once and evil shunned at once, with buts and ifs? Finally, Azaria, Maria's guardian angel, quotes an epistle of Peter which highlights the importance of blessing our enemies. Peter, a faithful echo of his master, repeats, "Do not pay back evil with evil or curse with curse, but rather bless, since it is for this that you have been called, to inherit the blessing." Oh, it is hard. I understand that it is hard. Even in the most spiritual creatures, the flesh is not cancelled out. But I want to teach you the secret to obtain victory over the human self, excessively incited by the arrows which continually wound you. Listen, soul of mine. If you contemplate the arrows of offences for what they are, offences, you cannot love them. If you contemplate those who shoot at you for what they are, unjust, you cannot love them. But if you contemplate the arrows of offences as the weapons of martyrdom, and do the same as Blessed Sebastian, who considered that every additional arrow was another feather granted for his flight close at hand, if you contemplate them as darts of fire which, in consuming your flesh with quick flames, serve to purify it and dissolve the jail of your soul, if you see your torturers as the most effective collaborators in giving you the martyr's crown, if you consider that God loves you limitlessly to the point of allowing you to be like his confessors, like his son, killed by men to redeem men, if you do what I am saying to you, you will love the offences which transfix you. You will kiss them as the martyrs kiss their chains. And you will love the ones who, in opening heaven to you by taking your life, are, without realising, your prime benefactors. They do not know what they are doing in evil. For if they knew it and did the same, their souls would be wretched. But they believe they are serving God, these new Jews, and saving the people by putting the innocent one to death. Our most holy Lord told you once, speaking in a vision, "There is no man who is completely bad, voluntarily bad, throughout life. It is thus necessary to feel pity, thinking of the good someone may have done which we do not know. Act this way, soul of mine."